At the beginning of today's gospel, Jesus drives out a demon, heals a mute man. Obviously a good work. The crowds are amazed, and their reaction is a normal reaction. Nothing like this has ever been seen in Israel. This is amazing. This is uncharted territory. Who is this? The Pharisees have the opposite reaction. They say this obviously good thing is actually a bad thing. What you're so impressed with and amazed by is actually the fruit of collaboration with demonic powers. Now that's a really weird thing to say. It's a really weird reaction. To attribute good to evil. But it's not as strange or as uncommon as we might think. It's actually all too common to misread or deliberately misinterpret the good things of God. Think of what happened on Sunday. Jesus went to Nazareth, his hometown. He already has a reputation for being a wonder worker, a man of great wisdom. You would think that the people of Nazareth would welcome this successful hometown boy and say, hey, someone from Nazareth has made it. I notice when people here in the neighborhood or someone from Las Piñas, when they pass the bar exam or they get a trophy or something, people put up a big screamer. Oh, one of our neighbors, one of our own people made a great victory, a top-notcher or successful in international competition or something. It's something to boast about. And remember, Nazareth had a pretty bad reputation. So you would think that the people of Nazareth would say, at last, someone's putting Nazareth on the map. But that's not the reaction. The people of Nazareth did not accept him. So there's something, as I say, that's all too common here, where people reject what is obviously good. Now, why is this? I think, first of all, there's a difference between celebrating somebody being a top-notcher or being a gold medalist and celebrating a prophet or someone who speaks for God. Because a person who accomplishes worldly success is no threat to us for the most part, unless we're in the same competition. But we can easily celebrate the victory of the neighbor who isn't passed the bar exam, because we're not taking the bar exam. It just seems like a good thing. But when someone comes along and claims to speak for God, a prophet, well then, that's someone above us. That's someone we have to submit to. That could be much more threatening. And that's what happens. Jesus is not rejected because he does miracles. He's not rejected because he's saying amazing things, great wisdom. He's rejected because he's a prophet. And that's what Jesus says. No prophet is accepted in his hometown. He identifies himself as a prophet, a spokesman of God, a representative of God. And that's what they won't accept. This tendency, which we might not notice all the time, runs through the whole history of the human family. This tendency to not submit to what is above us and instead honor what is below us, or substitute what is above with what is below. And that's the process or the pattern we call idolatry. Idolatry. Why do people make idols? Now, we think of classic idolatry, I mean, molten images, you know, graven images, statues, and that sort of thing. But that's not as common now. But the idea of rejecting God and the demands of God, and instead submitting ourselves to some false god, that's a very common thing. Now, I'm mentioning this because this is what we see in today's first reading. Again, Hosea. Hosea points out what the people of Israel have been doing they have not been submitting themselves to God, but instead have come up with their own system, set up their own kings, set up their own idols, silver and gold, calf and Samaria. And then he says, well, how is that working out for you, Israel? How is that working out for you? Because idolatry always looks like a great thing. When we don't have to submit to God, we don't have to bend our will to the will of someone above us. Instead, we can cast off that oppressive regime. We can free ourselves from that sort of demand, and we can instead have our own version of religiosity. Everyone has to have some religion, so let's have this one. One that it does not put demands on us, one that in fact is submissive to us. So here's an idol. Now I say the people in Hosea's time really did have a golden calf, maybe several of them in fact. But in modern times it's money or technology or politics or some form of power, and say, well, this is what I really submit myself to, because that way I'm free to do more. I can do what I want. I don't have to submit to some other power. I can claim to submit to this idol when in fact this idol is subject to me. And Hosea says, okay, how does it work? You can sow the wind if you want to. You can put your trust in emptiness if you want to. What's going to happen? You're going to end up with something even more empty, a whirlwind, a stalk of grain that forms no ear. You going to get any flower from that? No. And even if you did, says strangers would swallow it. In other words, your hope to be in a better position by entrusting yourself to some lower power is completely empty. You're actually making things worse for yourselves by not submitting to God. That's what Hosea is saying to the people. And the psalm is very well chosen to go with it. It's Psalm 115. It's the exposition of the fruits of idolatry. This is just excerpts from the psalm, but this is what it says. Our God is in heaven. Whatever he wills, he does. That's the true God. He's in charge. Like it or not, if we submit to him, we're better off. But even if we don't, he's still in heaven and he does what he wills. Their idols are silver and gold, the handiwork of men. And then there's this whole list of what idols can't do. They have mouths, but they speak not. They have eyes, but they see not. They have ears, but they hear not. Noses, but smell not. Hands, but feel not. Feet, but walk not. They can't do anything, obviously. But then the clincher, the killer line. Their makers, the makers of idols, shall be like them. Everyone that trusts in them. The fruit of putting our trust in anyone other or anything other than God is that we become as helpless and as useless as the idols themselves. That's what happens. That's what happens to the people of Israel. That's what happens in Hosea's time. That's what happens to the people of Nazareth when they reject Jesus. And that's what happens to the Pharisees, who are trying to pin Jesus' power on the prince of demons. You see what's happening? They're distorting divine work, claiming that it's evil, and in the process, they're ruining themselves, emptying themselves of all influence. They're like erasing themselves from the system. Now, it's important to reflect on this, because we see this happening all the time in the world. It's very difficult for modern people to see the good of submission to God, submission to the will of God, because it just seems like an infringement on freedom, an infringement on our dignity. It's a limitation on what we want to do. And so we say, well, I'd rather get a better computer. I'd rather hook up with some powerful corporation or whatever, army. Look at the world. are these powerful corporations and powerful computers actually making things better for everybody? No. I mean, there's some advantages, of course. But are people happier? Are things advancing? Or is there more division, more confusion, breakdown of families and relationships, even greater inequalities between the rich and the poor? You see, the paradox of Christianity is that we gain by lowering ourselves. We advance by submitting ourselves. That's always the way in Christianity. And that's what the world just can't accept. That we're actually better off under the kingdom of God than having our own kingdom. But that's the way it is. Jesus says this in so many different ways. It says in the gospel, he sees the people like sheep without a shepherd. Anyone who claims to be in charge of his own life ends up having no one in charge of his life. Sheep without a shepherd. But someone who has God for his shepherd doesn't need anything else. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. I have nothing, but in God I have everything. I'm poor, but in God I'm rich. I'm weak, but in God I'm strong. This is the paradox again and again. Yeah, I refer once again to that second reading we had on Sunday. Paul saying, I've got this problem, I've got this thorn, I've got this weakness, whatever it is. And I asked the Lord to take it away, and the Lord said, no, my power is made perfect in weakness. Submit yourself to me and humble yourself before me. Accept your limitations before me and you will be strong. That's the way. It's the way of faith. So the Pharisees don't know it. But the crowd, their basic intuition is right. Nothing like this has ever been seen in Israel. We're not going to top this by coming up with another idea. Let's submit ourselves to this power. This power of God at work in Jesus Christ. Let's let him be in charge, and then we can reign with him.